this week on Constructed Criticism. We do the set review for Ether Revolt. It's pretty exciting, something we've been, wanting to do for a couple weeks. One thing that is that we don't have some of the stuff that we typically have when we podcast because I switched jobs. I had to give back my work laptop, which is what we use for most of the podcast. So this one's going to be a little bit more unedited, a little bit more raw. I just want to remind everybody that set reviews are opinion-based for us. You know, we are just as prone to hyperbole as much as we try not to be as a lot of other Magic players. And sometimes, you know, we're not going to agree on cards with all of our listeners. We understand that we can be wrong about these cards, and we're okay with that. You know, a lot of zeros were given during the set review, and we just want to remind everybody that, you know, if you think the card is good, go test it, make an awesome deck. And if the deck you make is great, awesome. Go crush people with it. We want to be wrong because we want Magic cards to be good too. So thank you everybody for listening, and enjoy the episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Constructed Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I'm joined by my co-host, the man who doesn't want me on his couch, Michael Hinderrocker.
That's right. You stay on your own couch, Spencer.
The man who thinks it's funny, Casey Bloodworth.
Hey, what's up?
And also, how's it going?
What's new? You know, what's cracking?
That's not part of our contract. You can't say any of that.
Wait, you have to specifically say those things?
Yeah, those are the only two things we're allowed to say.
I feel like I don't approve of this contract.
Well, that's why you come to the meetings. You should.
So you end up fantasy football commissioner. So, real talk, if you could see 5 minutes into the future, like, I would just go to Vegas. I understand that I could make, first of all, I could make way more money on the stock market, but, like, I could be in Vegas instead.
Yeah, and, like, I don't know if you've ever tried to read the financial section of a newspaper, but, like, it's not super exciting. And then you have to, or, like, the Yahoo ticker even. Then you have to, like, look and see.
Maybe you could do all this in your underwear. It'd be so much better.
But then I could do all of it in my underwear in Vegas if I had enough money.
Gail, so can you really, like, trade stocks in 5 minutes? Like, I know that, like, it's much faster than it used to be. You don't have to, like, call down to somebody, but
I know you can.
You'd have to actually do it like from the floor of the New York Stock Exchange to be able to get like any real.
That was my initial thought. Like when I was thinking about this 5 minute superpower, I was like, I feel like I would have to be on the floor. And then I was like, I'd rather just go to Vegas.
Trading. I know you can do Forex trading. That will work in that kind of increment.
All right. Well,
but, you know, really, whatever.
You know what's similar to a stock market? That's buying Magic cards. You can go to Oasis Games. You can check them out on mdgoasis.com, oasiscg.com, and oasisgamesslc.com. You can buy all your Magic cards there. You can get 50% off your first order by using the code CCMPG at checkout, and you can get 5% or 4% off of every order by using the code. Would that be good? They are the sponsor of this podcast. I highly encourage you to check them out. They are amazing. We're doing the set review this week, so, like, very different podcast. Going to be more laid back. Going to be fun. We're going to talk about some magical cards. And, check out Oasis. And then
is there a spending threshold at which they'll give you the superpower to look 5 minutes into the future? Because I haven't achieved that one yet.
If they did, I would. I mean, I just feel like that would be, like, an unreal great superpower. Like, it's one that I don't know that anybody would catch you at. Like,
yeah, I mean, you'd get kicked out of a lot of casinos, but, like, you only have to
lose a couple of times.
You only have to 35 times twice to have $4 million, right?
Yeah.
So, like, it adds up fast.
Yeah. I thank you. Thank you for my monies. Anyway, we're doing the set review this week, so that means we asked our patrons for their top 20 cards in Ether Revolt. So we're going to use that, put it with our top 20 cards, and we give them an AP ranking, similar to like the AP pool in sports. So that means that if you rank the card 1, it gets 20 points. 2, it gets 19 points. 3, 18 points, and so on. To have this benefit and be part of the show, you just have to become a patron of $1 or more per month. And then every time we do a set review, you too can do the show with us. There's also other benefits that are pretty awesome, and it's really helpful for the show. So go to patreon.com/ccmtg, and you too can be a part of this. But we're going to get right into this.
Sorry, one more thing. So if you can see 5 minutes into the future and you're listening to a podcast, does it just get really difficult because you're hearing, like, stacked audio?
I think the point of the superpower is you can, like, decide when you're going to see 5 minutes into the future.
Okay.
And does it have like to be exactly 5 minutes? Because, like, that's, like, less valuable for things like coin flips.
You have to anticipate the coin flip in advance. Yeah. I don't know. The superpower is sounding difficult.
Like, yeah. I mean, if you were permanently stuck, you could see 5 minutes in the future, but you had to act in the present. That would be like a nightmare. But,
you'd probably just get hit by a car the first time you cross the street, and that would be the end of it.
Can we move on from this superpower now?
Yeah.
What, you don't want 5 minute superpower of the podcast?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't. I want the podcast. Yeah, let's get ready to this. So that's how the points break down for the set review, and we're going to start with obviously number 20. So number 20 on this list we have is Hungry Flames. Hungry Flames is an instant for a red and two, and it deals 3 damage to target creature and 2 damage to that target creature's controller.
Yeah, sort of a blaze effect, searing blaze or searing blood effect. Those effect cards are usually...
actually, I said that wrong.
You lied to me.
Yeah, it's 2 damage to target player. So it does both. So even if the creature dies, it doesn't stop it.
Yeah, that's how Searing Blaze works, too.
Not how Searing Blood works, though.
Yeah, sure. If they kill their creature in response to Searing Blood, it doesn't trigger. Yeah. So this one does cost 3 mana instead of 2, which is... you know, arguably a little bit worse or significantly worse, but it only costs...
It's arguably worse.
Arguably one more mana is at least one more mana.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, you know, factual. But unlike Searing Blood, it only costs 1 red, so it could see play in less heavily focused decks. It's a pretty reasonable effect for a card. I expect we'll see certainly some amount of standard play.
Yeah, so Hungry Flames came in with 17 points. You know, means most people probably had it somewhere in their list, and I think the card is reasonable. I think that it's something that you definitely could see standard play with. You know, for those who don't know how we do the grading on the show, it's from 0 to 5. 0 being unplayable, 5 being a multi-format all-star. And if I were to give this card a grade, it would be probably like a 2. I think it's below average. I think that 3 mana is a lot to ask for a spell that deals 3 damage to a creature. And the thing that's important to know about this card
is it 2 to a player and 3 to a creature? Or
yes.
Okay.
The thing that's important to know is that you actually do need a creature in play to cast this spell. So it's not like against a control deck, this is still a burn spell that can target them unless you want to target one of your own creatures.
Although that is, because it doesn't say to that player's controller.
That's true. So it still becomes an
option. That creature's controller, rather. That's not nothing. When you're looking for sort of the last points of damage and the fact that it won't get fizzled by them, say, like, Grasp of Darkness and your guy in response, right? That it's just, once you cast it, it needs to be countered or it's going to happen.
To its benefit, even, if they were to Grasp of Darkness your guy, you could do this in response to get this out of your hand.
Sure, that's true as well. This is a kind of a funny one. It's like, if it were either 1 in a red or red, I would say I know this card is very good.
Because yeah, 1 in a red, yeah, it would be great.
It would be extremely
red,
good.
Red would be very good as well, because we've just seen this effect. And at 2 mana, it's very strong, even if the numbers are slightly tweaked.
I believe this card falls into the same category of like Brimstone Volley as like how good a card can be. It has a ceiling that's like reasonably high for a card, but its floor could be like really low if like it just never fits into a deck. And I think that's why I would give it a 2.
Yeah, I would agree. 2 to 2.5. It's probably extremely good in the aggressive deck mirror and
pretty
mostly poor the rest
everywhere.
Of the time.
Yeah. But, I mean, the flip side is if you're playing a lot of that, if that becomes a big thing, right? I mean, if we're playing a bunch of, like, aggro mirrors, this card is clearly great in that spot.
Oh,
so,
yeah,
so that's
much.
I mean, that's not nothing.
Yeah, it's... not quite a 2-for-1, right, because it only does one thing, but if a burn spell, is, like if you're willing to cast a lava spike,
right,
this is basically a 2-for-1 if you kill a creature with it, so.
Well, or even if it just helps you, like, trade up, you know, a smaller creature with a larger one, whatever. I mean, those matchups so frequently come down to sort of attacking without a dominating board presence that cards like this are just really, really strong in those kind of matchups.
Yeah, exactly. Just kind of getting the most out of your cards, and this card can add up to a lot of value.
Next up, we have Vengeful Rebel. This card is a black and 2 for a 3/2 creature, Aetherborn Warrior. It has Revolt, so whenever it enters the battlefield with Revolt, If a permanent you control, well, sorry, I'm just going to read this correctly. It says revolt. When Vengeful Rebel enters the battlefield, if a permanent you control left the battlefield this turn, target creature if an opponent controls gets -3/-3 until end of turn. So I was very interested by what you said when you walked into the room and saw this on the list, Michael, because you said that it was Skin Render.
Yeah, I mean,
which
it's
costs
not...
5 mana.
Costs 4 mana.
Okay. Okay, but, sure, four mana.
But that's what it feels like. I mean, I haven't played a ton with this guy, mostly because the software I was using didn't have it in there for some reason. So I've been a little bit limited on playing games with this guy, but this guy seems really powerful to me. Like, if you're playing these sort of... Another card where sort of in, like, an aggressive mirror, you can really change the direction a game is going with, like, if you attack your guys into their guys, they block, one of your guys dies, some of their guys die, then you're able to follow it up with a creature that kind of furthers that swing.
Yeah. When I saw it, I was just, like, I thought it was an easier to trigger Wasteland Strangler.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly the card that it compares most directly to, because they're both three, they're kind of, they play in a very similar space of, you know, a really powerful card with some deck building cost. But the deck building cost is not really nearly as high on this one.
I agree. I think that this is actually a much easier deck building cost. I get that it probably, much like Wasteland Strangler, you can't just play it in literally every deck. But I think most decks can find some ways to trigger Revolt. And Wasteland Strangler really requires specific cards.
Yeah, exactly. You have to be ingesting, like, or exiling their cards in some way.
This card is just going to be good in, like, creature matchups in general, I think. It's very hard in those kind of matchups for your opponent to avoid Revolt being a thing.
I also wonder, and I don't know, I think that there might be some niche situations where it makes Wasteland Strangler better, but, like, a lot of the decks that, like, for example, no, I can't think of an example where, like, off the top of my head, where Wasteland Strangler currently is in Modern, where this card might not just be better.
Well, I think Eldrazi in Texas is the main place that Wasteland Strangler would seem to
be. Right, so that's what I was just going to say. So, like, other than, like, having Eldrazi mana, but here's the thing is, like, this ability is, like, pretty good. I would be willing to give this card a 3. I think it's actually just above the curve of, like, what you can reasonably expect. And it could see Modern play, which makes me want to give it, like, a 3.5. But, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a card that has a really high power level. Like, when it's good, it's going to feel basically oppressive, right?
And when at its worst, it's like a 3-power, 3-mana guy.
It's not horrible. Like, if you just have to cast it as a 3-2, I mean, it's not great, but it's, you know, it doesn't die to Liliana. There's nothing, like, inherently super embarrassing about it.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's like, there's certainly decks that you could construct where, like, this does this effect, like, basically whenever you want it, and then there's decks that you can do it where it does, like, 50% of the time. So it kind of just depends. I'm going to give this card a 3. I think that it's actually just pretty good.
I think this guy's kind of sneaky good. Like, he'll be better in some metagames than others, I think, more than even decks. It mostly depends on what kind of matchups you're playing. But if you're playing against other decks with small creatures, this guy's going to be a beating.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think that this will be probably a pretty consistent standard player anytime there's a black creature deck around, and is very good. It will definitely have a role the whole time as in standard.
It just doesn't take that much work. Like, when your downside is being a 3-mana 3-2, it's just not that bad a downside.
What would you guys give it in a grade?
Probably a 3.5.
It's hard for me to say because I haven't graded as many cards, but this is a card
that 2.5 is like an average.
Okay,
to construct a playable
Magic
card.
What is your standard example of a 2.5?
Oh, sure. That's a really good point. So 2.5s are like the kind of cards that, like, we'll see standard play, but, like, aren't just a jam four of in your deck. A 3 is like, you know, I'm gonna play this card. It's gonna be like one of the key components of my deck. Not necessarily a 4 of, but, like, definitely like very important to the structure of my deck. And then when you get to the 4 range, that's like, this is the card we're building decks around.
So I think it's pretty clearly not quite at that level, but this is like a card that it's more metagame dependent than a lot of the cards that I think you would rate in this kind of space, but it's a card that I could absolutely see playing 3 to 4 of and being very happy to do so.
Yep.
Yeah, my only real concern about this card is that it could sort of force its own obsolescence in kind of the same way that Reflector Mage did. It didn't really ever affect the amount of play that it had, but there were so many, because you had to be so conscious of Reflector Mage, it limited the cards you could play, and this is kind of in almost a similar space to that, where it's like, I can't really just get blown out by this all the time, so I can't play this type of effect.
Just below that kind of level, and that might actually keep it right at that kind of level, where it's always going to be fairly good, because it's, you know, it's never going to feel like super oppressive, but it's going to be just really solid, probably basically every time.
Next up, we have Balrog's Expertise. This card is 3 blue-blue for a sorcery. Return up to 3 target artifacts and or creatures to their owner's hand. You may cast a card with converted mana cost 4 or less from your hand without paying its mana cost. This card got 19 points, so and it's tied with another card with 19 points. Casey, what do you think of this card?
I don't know. This is one of the harder cards to evaluate in that if you get full value out of it, like if you put in a Gideon or something horrifying like that, like this is such a blowout where it's, you know, upheaval, you play a really powerful 4-drop. If your opponent doesn't have enough permanence to be able to get full value out of it, or like the cards you're putting into play aren't that high power, it's it could be kind of suspect, but I don't know. I think that if there's a deck where this card is good, it's likely the best card in the deck.
When I saw this card, one of the things that I thought of were like, what are 4 mana or less planeswalkers that don't do a good job of protecting themselves?
Yeah, I mean, I could see this putting in like a Tezzeret being really powerful. Like, if you already have a couple of artifacts and you're able to bounce the creatures that Tezzeret can't kill and then minus to kill another thing, that seems pretty great. If you're putting in a Gideon, like Casey said, where you go from sort of a board where you're a little bit behind
to now like
you're ahead,
now the game is over.
That's pretty powerful. Yeah. The biggest issue with this card in my mind is that, like, so a lot of the expertises struggle with this to some extent. It's like, how good is the front, like the first half of this card? And realistically, like the bottom part is really powerful, right? Like getting to play a 4-drop, if you're getting most of a card out of the first half, is great. But you're not always going to have a 4-drop in hand, like especially when you draw these later in the game. I've played a bit with a bunch of them, and they mostly feel kind of underwhelming in that sense. And it's just a question of like how often you're really going to be able to have 3 things to bounce. Because if you're routinely actually bouncing 3 things, this card is clearly great.
Yeah, very much so. If like I said, if you're getting full value out of this and putting something into play, it's going to swing the balance of the game in such a dramatic way.
Yeah, I would give this card like a 1 to a 1.5 because I think that it's going to be a 2 of in your deck sometimes in a very specific deck. And it's going to be a key role player in that deck, but it's only ever going to be a role player. You know, one of the things that I think that people see when they see these cards is they see, like, the huge upside, right? But they don't really see the cost of having a 5-mana bounce spell in their deck. And if you have a 5-mana bounce spell in your deck against a deck that doesn't care about you bouncing their stuff, like a very hyper-aggressive deck or a deck that, like, doesn't play things for you to bounce, that's a real cost because it's, like, a 5-mana card. And I think that you're going to limit it on the, like, when you think of, like, a Wrath effect that costs 5 mana, which people play 2 of now, it's already a huge cost that card costs 5. And this card, while you recoup a lot of that by getting to, like, have synergy in your deck, the front half just isn't good enough to make me think that this will ever be, like, I'm jamming 4 of these. And I've also played with the card, so I think that that's just where I would put it.
Yeah, it sort of reminds me of Cyclonic Rift more than anything else, where it's, like,
the sweetest fun of.
Yeah, exactly. It was like, bam, win the game, or kind of didn't do anything, and nowhere really in between.
Right. If you were seriously like bounce 3 of your things, put in Gideon, or like cast a Glimmer of Genius, or whatever. Like, if you're doing like that mode of the card, the game is basically over when you resolve this.
Yeah, and also like the fact that it's specifically creatures or artifacts that it can bounce does limit it a little bit. You can't like really get somebody, you can't, you know, get a Stasis Snare or a Planeswalker or anything.
That was actually one of my thoughts too, is like when that was actually one of the things that like when I thought this card existed, and maybe that's why I'm so low on it, is like when I saw this card I was like, oh man, like bouncing like some Stasis Snares, get back like get back these guys. Like,
or like bounce your Liliana on and, six, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And,
oh, yeah. Man.
Yeah. So
doesn't do with all of that.
Yeah, if it did, this card would actually just be like pretty good, even if you weren't consistently casting spells off of it.
But so to be fair, I really do like the fact that it does can bounce Panharmonicon. One of the reasons is that is taking a turn off to play Panharmonicon is like a huge like investment.
Not that it bounces it, but that it, oh, you want it to bounce your opponent's Panharmonicon?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I was going to say it could hypothetically be interesting with Panharmonicon in the sense that
it casts
you can
it.
Also play your own Panharmonicon, yeah. Or bounce one of your own guys, then put it back into play to re-get triggered.
That's true.
Like with Revolt stuff.
Right? I was just going to mention, with Revolt, that does that too. So what would you guys give this card as a grade?
I don't know. I think that it's probably a 1 because it's not going to be good often, but when it's good, it's basically broken.
Oh, yeah. It's if this card is like doing it to you, it is the end of the game. Like, you can't beat the full version of this card. Right? If your opponent is like, bounce through your guys, put in a Gideon, make a knight, yeah. Go. You're basically conceding.
One of the things is like, how often is this... How often is it not better to just cast your Gideon and then, like, wrath them and then make a knight itself, right? Like, that's the real question.
Well it's because of the like mana efficiency. Yeah. You're getting all right. That for just 5 mana instead of 9 mana.
It's, sure. It's the tempo gain, but, like... The thing is that when you're also playing a card that half the time does something really busted and half the time does basically nothing, it's really hard to evaluate right. What you're doing.
Right. All right. Well, let's go on to the next one. Next up, we have coming in with 20 points. We have Saram's, or sorry, yeah. 19 points again, tied with this card. Rishkar Pima Renegade. This card is 2 and a green for a 2/2 legendary elf druid. When it enters the battlefield, put a 1/1 counter on each of up to 2 target creatures. So that, whoa, I didn't even realize this could target itself. That's interesting.
It's really 3 for a 3/3.
Okay. And then each creature you control with a counter on it has tapped, add a green to your mana pool. Man, this card just got so much better again.
Yeah, I haven't got to play with this guy a whole lot yet, but...
This card seems like actually great.
Very good. Because I think when you look at cards, like, too often I think you get excited about their upside. But this is a card that, like, just if you have another creature, is great.
3
like,
mana
like
for...
Just what you're paying for.
For your... 4 power and, like, ramping yes. You 2 next turn? Like, I just...
Yeah, I mean, I think this card is just really... It's like its bad case scenarios are fine. 3 for a 3 mana 3/3 that taps for green is its absolute basement. And that is... Yeah, probably close to a playable Magic card.
Yeah, it's a. I've got to play against this card a little bit yesterday.
What can you do for 3-6?
You can cast a.
Big Chandra. Cast 2 more of these guys.
Yeah, if they weren't
not
legendary.
As good because it's legendary.
Cast Nissa minus. Cast Nissa minus.
What?
You could.
Yeah, when the other creature I put a counter on was the black green snake guy, you're going to be feeling the pain.
Oh, man. That's like. Honestly, this card just seems so good to me. Like, I obviously don't have, like, Gather in front. I mean, I do have Gather in front of me, but I'm going to search 6 drops in the middle of the show. But the more I, like, think about this card and read it, the more I think I'm underrating it.
You know what? The green expertise is 6
mana. Oh, yeah,
mana.
That would be sweet. He's kind of.
I think this card is a 4. I think this is a build your deck around me card.
I want to try this guy with Cryptolith, right?
Of course you do.
It's not surprising.
I love that card in general. but this
how many Ornithopters are going to be in this deck?
0. But this card feels just like low key good. Like, I don't know that it's like its upside is maybe not insane. But this is the kind of guy where I don't think you're ever, like, super upset that you drew him. You're like, oh, man, a 3 mana 3/3.
I think this card is going to be about as good as Nissa Vastwoodseer was, and that card was great. And I'm going to give this card a 4. I'm going to give it a 4.
I don't know. I got to play against the card yesterday, like I said, and it was really good. It mostly plays how it reads. It doesn't have any weird, you know, hidden drawbacks or anything. I don't know that it's quite, at least in the deck that I was playing against, it didn't feel quite on the power level of a 4, but it was very good. I don't know, probably maybe a high 3, maybe a 3.5.
So what I like about this guy, though, is that, like, I don't think it actually plays likeness of Astwood Seer, but in the same kind of, like, pretty decent upside, basically always solid. Like, it's just like a fine Magic card. You're never, like, going to be like, oh, man, I can't believe I had to play this guy on three.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's like a pretty good Magic card, and when he's great, he's going to be better than that.
Yeah, he does a fairly powerful thing, and I certainly expect it will be around. It just depends on how good,
but like
green cheap creature decks are.
And he's legendary, so you probably like maybe don't actually want four of him, just like you wouldn't want four Nissa of Astwood Seer in most decks. But like, I sort of feel the four rating on him in some sense. And just like, I think he's really safe. Like, yeah. If there was a card, I was like, this card will
is
see
just
play.
Going, and it's going to like see play throughout its lifetime. That's why I kind of compared it to Nissa of Astwood Seer.
Yeah,
it was like, oh, yeah, this is just good enough. Goes, that's gonna yeah. like, it's gonna do its thing. It's going to be a format staple, which is kind of what we've decided a four is. And for that reason, that's what I'll
like,
give it.
Like, it'll fluctuate. It'll go up and down. It'll be better in some decks than others, and whatever. But like, there's no way that card just isn't fairly good. Yeah. It's just good on rate.
But I can see where Casey's coming from, because like, one of the things that we talked about really early is, like, when we talk about fours, it's, like, Elspeth Sun's Champion, right? Where it's, like...
Right, like, it actually, like, standard warped around it.
Yeah, I don't know that, like, you could possibly warp standard around this card just because it's almost impossible to play as a four of, I think.
Yeah.
But it feels like the kind of guy where if you can put him in a deck where he... where you're really getting something out of both parts of his ability, like, there's no way that card just isn't good.
Next up, we have Sram's Expertise. This card is 2 white-white for a sorcery. Create 3 1/1 servo artifact creature tokens. You may cast a card with converted mana cost 3 or less from your hand without paying its mana cost. I hate this card. I've played with this card a lot. I think this card is actively not good. I think it's just a trap.
Yeah, I also don't know about this, just because, like, what are you putting into play off of it?
The only good thing that I put into play off it so far is Nissa.
I got to put Servo Exhibition into play off it, which was kind of cute, and then untap and cast the blue draw 3.
I don't know. This card is weird to me. I have a hard time evaluating it, because I think that this card is probably the reason that Always Watching says non-token.
Oh, obviously.
Combo. Straight up, though, right?
Yeah.
Like, legitimately, yes.
Yeah, because, like, it always was... That was always kind of a weird... Because, like, who cares about that? I just don't know that you're ever going to put in anything to play that, like... The deck that wants 3 1/1s...
Wants, like...
Is, like, this is probably going to be the last card in your hand.
That's my yes. point, is, like, it costs 4 mana. Well, like, so, are you holding your Nissa? Like, are you... What are you casting instead?
There's a chance that, like, this is your After the Wrath spell, like, out of your sideboard, like, your rebuilding spell.
But, like, the problem that I have with that is, like, you could just play Gideon in that slot.
Well, my problem with it is it just isn't good.
Exactly. That's
right?
My
like,
point.
Like, 4 mana for 3 1/1s just isn't a good rate. Like, a lot of the other ones feel, like, threaten for 3 competitive rate.
So,
right?
Casey, I believe that this card is a 0. So how upset will you be with me when I give it a 0.5? You call me a coward?
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a 0. I think this card is actually bad.
Yeah, I think this card is... I don't see the deck that it goes in.
You know
in.
What the thing is I tried it in a lot of decks. Like, it doesn't do what I want it to do. It's always like this... It's like the worst card in my deck every time I have it.
I think if it made 4 1/1s, it might be good enough.
If it was a 4-mana 4-4 split among 4 bodies...
Well, I mean, how often has Servo Exhibition felt like you're getting an above-rate spell? Because this is worse than that on rate. And getting a free spell in the kind of decks that want that effect just isn't really very good.
So what would you rate it?
I don't know. I also tried this a bunch in a couple of decks for the last few days, and it's just not... I'm with you guys. They're like... The decks that want this style of card don't have things hanging around in their hand to cast.
Did either of you guys have this on your list? Well, Michael, you didn't submit a list.
So no. By definition, boom.
Okay, so this all came from the listeners, which is good. I mean, they got to hear our opinion on it, right? That's like why we invite... Because if it had just been our list, we wouldn't have even gotten to talk about the card.
Yeah, it's factual.
I think this one is kind of a trap. I see why it like looks interesting and it feels like, oh, like green white token Z, oh, this should be good. But I don't think there's like, the problem is the decks that want this kind of card are curve decks. And you can't, like, there's...
The top of your curve is right, four.
Exactly. There's no threes to play once you've played your four drop.
Yeah. All right. So you're going to give it a zero also?
I mean, that being said, I'll probably get ranched by
this. So to be fair, when we all give it a zero, Kyle Fabo is going to buy, like, 5 million of them.
Yeah, and I'm sure that...
And probably be right.
This card is going to like win a bunch of SCGs or something, and I'm going to sign a bunch of them.
I was going to say, I'm going to directly lose to this card at the Pro Tour like 85 times now that I've said I don't think it's playable. But you know.
Next up, we have Green Belt Rampage. This card is one green for a 3/4 elephant. Man, what a card!
Yeah.
Just really stop good. Reading there.
This is
just the broken version of Wild Nakano.
Yeah, it's a 5. It also has, when it enters the battlefield, pay 2 energy. If you can't, return it to its owner's hand and you get an energy. So I think this card is a definition 2.5 in my opinion. This card is exactly what it looks like. It is like a role player in your deck that you'll play some number of, and it's going to be good in the decks that it's good in, and it'll be a role player in standard, and that's it. Like this card is the perfect example of a 2.5 in my opinion.
Interesting. I think this card is great. I think that if you are in a deck that can produce a lot of green mana, like if you play this on one, get an energy, again, play it on two, and then play it again on two, it's basically like, it's like
a 2-mana 3/4.
Right, which is better than you're getting on the rate of like most of the cards you're playing.
Sure.
In that slot. And then it's a 1-mana trigger revolt if you aren't producing a lot of energy.
Yep.
I found this card to be pretty good in basically every deck I played it in. I think it's a card that will probably be a 4 of in a lot of creature decks.
All right.
This one with Pummeler. I'm sure you guys have played against, you know, Pummeler playing this card. And I kind of like it in that deck. Like, the 3/4 for one sort of gives you a little bit of a different element. Because one of the things that a lot of the decks that make a lot of energy lack, like, they're...
is high toughness.
Just high toughness, like things that survive wrath effects.
Yeah, and just guys kind that of are good at
rumbling
diversity
in the aggro matchups. And if you can sort of use either half of him, like if you can sometimes use him as an energy generator and sometimes as an energy user, like if you can use him both ways, I think he's really good. And I haven't been able to try him in a deck that's like super interested in just getting revolt with him yet, but I'd be curious to try that as well.
What would you rate it?
This card is kind of hard to say for me. It so much depends on like what ends up being good deck wise, because I think if there's a green based revolt shell that's good, this card is clearly great in that deck. Like great.
Yeah.
If there's an energy shell, I don't know that he's not like exciting in that deck, but I think he's solid. So somewhere between like a 2.5 and a 3, depending on.
Yeah, what's interesting is I actually think that this card is not that good in like decks that actually produce a lot of energy. Like you should not be playing this alongside Attune with the Aether basically ever, which is kind of interesting because it reads like something that wants energy. But I think that it's better as a small time energy enabler and occasionally like a 3/4 that you play on two to block their Sylvan Advocate.
So where I liked it in the energy decks is that it gave me a really good creature in the aggro mirror. Because just like a 3/4 for one, if you're already casting other spells that make it, so like in different matchups it kind of worked differently.
Yeah. It's
right. That like sometimes it was more of an enabler, but in some matchups it was very much just like, why do I get to play a 3/4 for one? This seems, you know, really good when you're attacking me with Veteran Motorist.
Yeah, exactly. It's an interesting card. I think it's probably a 3, because at the end of the day, it's still a 3/4. It doesn't do anything.
Yeah. And it's also interesting to note here that, like, you know, we have vastly different wording on how, like, we feel about the card, and yet our grades are pretty close together. Like, that's kind of why the conversation is more important than the grades at the end of the day.
Well, it sort of depends on, like, this just feels like the kind of card that isn't ever going to be, like, format-defining.
Yeah.
You're not going to be playing, like, the Green Belt Rampager format, right? That just, like, isn't a thing that's going to happen. But
shows what we know.
Yeah, exactly. You can quote me on that.
Famous last words.
Blows up in my face. But
we're going to be the SRAM's expertise green belt rampage format.
Yeah, it's a combo deck. You can play it for free, and then it bounces back to your hand. It's so good.
Yeah. It's like nothing even happened.
But, I mean, I do think the card is powerful. Just like a lot of the energy creatures are kind of weak on rate, and this guy is great on rate. So I think that he gives you a little bit of a different dimension.
That's how I feel about the card also. Next up we have Heroic Intervention. This card is one and a green for permanent. An instant says permanent control gain hexproof and indestructible until end of turn. This card got 23 points. And yeah, this is a classic sideboard card. Like, it's a card you'll put in your sideboard. We have grades that we give... called sideboard and combo, where they just kind of don't fit in like anywhere else. We did that a few sets ago and a while ago now, but yeah, sideboard and combo, and this is definitely just a sideboard card.
Yeah, I could see maybe like weird decks playing it in its main deck, but it's pretty good, right? Like, as far as they've printed a lot of instants that counter Wraths, basically. And this is certainly the best version of that card ever printed.
I think the best version of that card ever printed was Boros Charm.
Nobody's ever used that mode of Boros Charm.
Have you played the burn deck that beat a set GP Albuquerque?
Yeah, it was 2 mana, deal 4 damage.
Against us.
Against everyone. I mean, other than like in the Boros Reckoner, Azorius Charm, Boros Charm combo
Lucky
deck.
Charms. Oh, man.
That was just good, clean fun.
Oh, man. Lucky Charms. You know what Lucky Charms is?
Mediocre breakfast cereal.
And a sweet, sweet Jeskai combo deck.
Yeah, I played that deck a lot. It was good times. But, yeah, this card is perfectly fine, though. It does exactly what it says it does.
It does it every time.
But it does it really well, right?
Yeah, like, exactly.
It's really flexible. I think the fact that it counters a Wrath, and it can counter a burn spell, and it can save your creatures from combat, like...
Oh, man. You know what's really powerful? We have Barral's expertise on this list twice.
Yeah. Good old apostrophe.
Yeah, the first time, you know, I don't know what that card is.
Exactly. So that's on me. But... Yeah, I think that this card will be the thorn in the side of every control player on Earth for the next 2 years.
Well, it's going to make you lean towards playing -X effects instead of Fumigate, right?
It's all right. I'm going to throw in a surprise card for this list since we have two... that's already on the list.
I'm going to throw in my surprise card. We're going to talk about Glint Sleeve Siphoner.
Is that not on this list?
Because it's not, and it should be. And it should be like number two.
What
this card is ridiculous.
Happening? What is happening?
Yeah, that card is really good.
So let's talk about that. Just, you know,
sometimes things change.
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't read my pivot tables that closely.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure that I have single-handedly harassed everyone we know into thinking this card is good.
I don't know that you harassed me at all.
Yeah, I required no harassment.
I feel like I would not shut up about this card.
No,
the first time I saw it. Or maybe that was Matt and Alex. I don't know.
I played a bunch of terrible decks just trying to make this card happen for myself.
So have I.
And it's pretty good.
Yeah. And all of those decks are better because of it.
Yeah, the draws, when you have this card, it feels like Dark Confidant, basically.
It feels way better than that. What are you talking about?
The fact that it has Menace like is surprisingly powerful.
Yeah, so this card is black and one for a 2/1 Menace Human Rogue. When it enters the battlefield or attacks, you get one energy. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may pay 2 energy to draw a card, and you lose 1 life.
I'm just going to say this. I have no idea what these are selling for right now, like pre-ordering online. But if there was one card I was going to like go hard on, it would be this one.
You're going to go hard in the paint on this one?
I mean, I'm not, because I'll be able to borrow them. But
maybe, unless you just convince the world to buy them all up like an idiot.
You know, so...
Yeah, so leave 4 in stock, but you know...
All right, so you're high on this card. What makes it great?
That it's good when you try hard. Like, so sometimes you're like attuned with Aetheron 1 or Aether Hub into Black Source and it gets to draw a card immediately. But a 2/1 Menace in a deck that's like trying to
attack... I mean, not immediately. It's still on your upkeep.
Sure, right. But like, you get it the first turn and then basically every turn thereafter.
Yeah.
So sometimes you get to like... I don't know. I was playing some games with a with an energy deck where between this and Tireless Tracker, I was like outdrawing decks playing Glimmer of Genius. It's like nice Glimmer of Genius. I'm drawing two cards a turn for free.
I've also played this in Tireless Tracker decks. That's where I found the most success with it also. I mean, what are they going to do? Right. Are they going to block this and not my Tireless Tracker? Like, good luck.
Well, and the fact that it has to be double blocked is like in a deck that's like going wide and attacking, which is most of the decks that I played it in. It's like such a, like, I can't keep getting attacked by this, but I can't double block it because then I'm going to like take 7 damage this turn and I can't do that either.
I think Tom Ross had posted a human shell with it, which was similar to what you had tried it in, right?
Yeah.
Where like, you know, if I have like an Expedition Envoy and a Thalia's Lieutenant and this guy in play, it's like, yeah, I mean, I can double block and take like 6.
What would you rate this card, Casey?
I don't know.
Its community rating is 5 stars with 5 for 5 rating with 0 votes.
Yeah.
Maybe we should edit this out. Does no one realize this is a card in this set? What is happening?
That's how good it is. The Wizards rated it 5 stars. They know already.
Yeah, exactly. No, I don't know. This is the kind of card that I get hyperbolic about, but I think that this card is like actually great. Like, we might be in the Glint Slave Siphoner format. Right? This card is...
So you're like 4.5 in this thing.
I think it's probably a 4. Maybe higher. Like, this is a card that could be like the Scourge of Standard.
This has consistently felt like the most powerful card I've played with out of this set, and it's not really that close.
Okay, so you're going 4.5 here.
I mean, I don't know what you'd compare it to, but like if I look at what's high up on this list, I'd take it over. I mean, I guess.
I mean, 4.5 means that it's a standard all-star that will likely not see like tons of multi-format play.
I don't think this card works in multi-format play because like there's
energy
just,
is
there's
a...
such a high marginal cost to playing a bunch of energy yeah. producers as you go back in time. But like this feels like playing Dark Confidant if they were just like, yeah, it has menace for some reason. And there's like a deck building cost to playing it, which is you have to play some other energy cards, but there are a lot of really good energy cards. Like it's just not that parasitic. Like You'd think that it would feel like a higher cost than it is.
Well, yeah, this card I think could play just a lot of different roles. Like even out of the sideboard of like maybe like a
yeah, like, I'd been
Aetherworks Marvel type of deck where you're like similar to the Tireless Tracker where it's just like oh god, like
yeah, I'd been trying a Dynavolt Tower control deck with these in the board.
I'm sorry to hear that. But
side out all your removal, and I'll side in my, you know,
Dark Confidant.
Phyrexian Arena on
yeah.
a stick.
Yeah, it's powerful.
Yeah, overall, I think this card is great. I would give it a 3.5. I think that it's going to be a real staple in the format. I don't know that, like, it'll be format... Maybe it's a 4. I don't know.
It's good. I mean, all I will say is, like, if you have not played with this card yet, you are doing yourself
a
disservice.
I give the green guy a 4. Maybe this is a 4, too. I mean, they're like... Yeah, he's just good. The card's just good. It's just, yeah, I'm going to give it a 4.
You will be surprised.
I'll join you at a 4, Casey.
Yeah, if you play this, you will be surprised.
Next up, we have Felidar Guardian. This card got 24 points. It is a creature, cat, for, unlike what Matt Kling thought, it costs a white and 3 for a 1/4. When it enters the battlefield, exile target permanent you control. Return that card to the battlefield under your control. Under its another permanent you control. Yeah, under its owner's control. Sorry.
So don't flicker something you stole with Confiscation Coup. Flicker literally anything else, but don't flicker that.
Yep. So this card gets the combo grade. One of the things that I like to remind people is that just because the card's in a combo doesn't mean it's only good in the combo. So, for example, this card could easily, if the combo didn't exist, this card could have ended up in like a Panharmonicon deck. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it plus two of it plus Panharmonicon are just infinite mana.
Yeah, or just infinite whatever, right?
ETB
whatever your heart desires.
Anything
infinite everything. Infinite all of
yeah.
it.
You know, when Deceiver Exarch was a card, it saw play in non Splinter Twin decks. It saw play in Bant Pod, which was just to get you from 2 to 4 in your pod chain. And like this card can have similar roles, kind of like that, where it's just like, oh yeah, I actually do want this effect in my deck.
Yeah, it's
like, just a really synergistic card.
Right. It. Yeah, exactly. You're not likely ever going to play it out of a deck that's not playing any combos. But you are trying, like,
but it's okay, right? It's like, it's not a guy where you're like, oh my god, I can't believe I drew this card.
It's not Altar of the Brood, where you're playing it in your Jeskai Ascendancy combo and hate your life if you don't have the Jeskai Ascendancy, right? It's a card that has text. It blocks a lot of creatures that people are playing right now. It kind of, it gets you either a mana back or an ETB back when you play it.
And, like, a lot of the stuff you'd get with it is, like, it's not, like, super busted, but if you get to, I don't know, Flicker a Thoughtnauts here, or Flicker a Drowner of Hope, or, I mean, if we're playing in, like, a Panharmonicon-style deck, flickering on any of those ETBs is, like, pretty good.
Right? Yeah,
it's a fine Magic card that has the upside of sometimes reading, oh, also, you win the game.
Yeah, exactly. It triggers Revolt, which is, like, a little bit more marginal, but not so marginal.
But it triggers Revolt on a creature that's already in play. Right. You can Flicker a creature with Revolt to...
Yeah, to really get him.
I think, you know, it sounds a little worse than it probably will end up playing.
All right, next up we have Metallic Mimic. This is an artifact creature for 2 mana, those being 2 generic mana. The card is a 2/1 artifact creature shapeshifter. As it enters the battlefield, choose a creature type. The Mimic is the chosen creature type. Each creature you control that of the chosen type that enters the battlefield with a 1/1 counter on it. So I want to just make it very clear to people. I don't know why I've seen this on Reddit, on Facebook posts. This card does not ETB and Thalia's Lieutenant. Because if it did, and also did the other thing it does, this card would be a 5. It would actually just be...
It'd be like the better version of
every Lord ever printed.
Yeah. It's fine. I actually played it for, like, a couple of matches before I remember that Thalia's Lieutenant is a card. And it was fine.
I've played it in Thalia's Lieutenant's decks and been perfectly happy with it.
Yeah, if you're in a really wide deck that wants 8 of that effect, like, yeah, it's totally... Or, yeah. Like, 8 similar types of effect. It's a totally reasonable card. I don't know. It's going to be at its best in...
The play, like, a turn 1, like, a Savannah Lion Human. Turn 2, this... Turn 3, like, 2 guys. Turn 4, Lieutenant is like, oh my gosh, his board is so huge.
Yeah, so I think that part of the card is, like, really good, obviously. I'm a little bit nervous about playing something else that's terrible against Liliana.
So that's actually what I was going to say. I think that the fact that your deck is already... Most of the decks that would want this card are usually going to be inherently weak to Liliana. Just having another card that's... weak to Liliana can certainly be a problem.
Well, it's kind of both ways, though, right? Like, if you're on the play,
then other cards become better against Liliana,
right? I mean, unless they have some sort of...
Or they could just play Liliana and kill this, and then that's not true.
I'm curious to see how, like, this card does not line up well against Fatal Push or Liliana, because you're not getting anything when you cast this, and it's pretty bad on raid itself. So I'm curious to see how this guy ends up turning out, because I pretty much think if this guy is good, it's just going to be sort of the mono white or light splash human shells that are playing it, right? Like,
that's where I expect
you don't really see this popping up all over the place.
Yeah, I just don't know.
Yeah, if it was a 1.5 is like a role player in one deck.
Yeah, I think that any tribal deck centered, like, that's a heavy tribal focus will probably play it.
You can play this and the Aetherborn one, and then you have 2 lords.
Yeah, 2 suspect lords. No, this card is...
So the Lord is great.
Yeah, but it's like 5 mana.
It's not 5, it's 4.
It's whatever.
You can cast it off Barrel's Expertise.
Boom!
you can cast this one off the White Expertise and do nothing.
You can cast this one...
It happens in the wrong order.
You can cast this one off the Red Expertise.
And, I mean...
And also just have a guy and steal their guy.
I think the Red Expertise might be surprisingly reasonable.
That's... I think that was like... Oh, is it on here? Is that what this is? No.
That's the green one.
I think it was like really high on my list. The red one. Anyway. So what do you guys give this? I'm giving it a 1.5. I think it's like a role player in one deck.
Yeah, probably pretty close to that same thing. It's fine. It's like it... I don't expect it to ever be broken. And I don't expect it to be unplayable.
This is like the crappy version of Thalia's Lieutenant. Which...
It's kind of like the crappy version of Adaptive Automaton.
I don't even know what that is.
It's a 3-mana 2/2 that just is a lord for a chosen type.
Okay. So the crappy version, this still is like the crappy version of Thalia's Lieutenant, whatever. It's fine. This card is okay.
Next up,
it's playable, right? Like, yeah. I'm going to at least try it, but I don't expect it to be great.
Next up, we have Oath of Ajani. This card is a legendary enchantment. It comes in with 29 points. And Ajani finally took the oath, folks. Many of you have already seen this card. It was like a huge deal when it was spoiled. People were just talking about it forever. Which means I'm probably going to give it a lower rate than it probably deserves because I hate overrated things.
She had a lot of time to think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This card is a green and a white. And when it enters the battlefield, put a 1/1 counter on each creature you control. Planeswalker spells you cast, get your Twitter away from here. Planeswalker spells you cast. Oh, I thought you were looking up that tweet. Planeswalker spells you cast one less. Cast. I just can't even
Planeswalker
talk.
Spells you cost, cast one less to cost. Cost.
cost. Planeswalker spells you cast, cost one less to cast.
Okay, so this card is
bad.
It's fine.
It's bad.
I wouldn't pay two mana for either.
I want
of
to
this.
Be very clear about something. Okay. Spencer, how could you not like this? It ramps you into your Planeswalkers. You're right. I would love to go two drop into Gideon. That sounds great. You know what doesn't sound great about that 2-drop? It's doing absolutely nothing other than that.
It puts a counter on your Thraben Inspector.
Like, so, holy crap. This card is, like, actually terrible.
The problem,
because
right,
the thing is that when it is at its best, it's putting, like, 5 counters on guys. And then you could have just cast any card that does that, and it didn't have to be this one. Like, I... Okay, go ahead, Michael.
So, I don't think either half of this card is worth 2 mana, right?
And when you put them together, it's still not worth two different colors of mana.
The thing is that you're never, like, there's never going to be a game where you get both halves of this effect in the same game.
Right, and where it's meaningful, right?
Well, right, but you're either getting counters or you're using it as a ramp spell. And I don't know why that's better than, like, playing Servant of the Conduit.
But that's my exact, like, literally when I see this card, I'm like, this could just be a Servant of the Conduit.
And that card could attack for 2.
Yeah.
And that also puts 2 power into play and ramps me.
I don't really see what everybody's so excited about this card. I'm sure that I'm going to lose to some amount of, like, Oath, Gideon, Nissa, Ajani.
So if there was, like, if there was, like, really, really cared specifically that they were counters, that were like being put on the creatures, right? Like, rather than it just putting power on the board, it specifically put counters on the board, and you like for example, the new Gideon, the new Ajani, right? What does he do?
Or like with the snake guy, right? With whining.
Well, that's what I'm saying is like, yeah. So like, Johnny.
It just seems kind of underwhelming.
So, oh, there's 2 of them. I want this one though, right? So the new Majani, yeah. It, why are you so small, MTG Coldfish?
It costs 6 mana, 4 and green white. It comes in with 4 loyalty. It's -2 is exile target creature.
They gain life. Their plus is draw cards, and then their -9 is like put a bunch of 1/1 counters on stuff, right?
Is that really what its ultimate is? It's minus, or its plus is, like, look at your top 3.
And you get all the
permanents, non-land permanents.
So, like, so maybe if there's a deck that's like, this is Johnny, and then, like, I don't even know, what could possibly want, I can't actually figure it out. Why would I want Oath of Ajani in my deck?
No, I think you're right. It's just, this is
but
like,
people really like it. Like, they really, really, really like it.
So, I get, like, the problem is that every scenario I imagine it in, when I'm imagining, like, it's good cases, it's, like, a passable card, but hardly good.
Yeah, exactly.
And I can imagine a lot of situations where you just end up, like, holding this for a bunch of turns, because you're always like, well, I'm only going to get, like, 1 counter out of it, and I already have 4 lands in play, so I don't really need to make my Gideon cost less.
I'm willing to be wrong, but I actually think this card is a 0. I actually can't figure out, like, maybe it's, like, a 1 where it's, like, it's going to be, like, really good in some deck. Like, just busted. And it's going to be like, oh, all I need for this deck is Oath of Ajani. But, like, it just, you have to already be committed to the board. And then when you're not, like, it's doing something that you...
I think the problem with this card is it's way more like a charm than people think it is. Where, like,
that's how I feel about it.
But it's a two-mode charm where neither half is particularly powerful.
Yeah, I think that there will certainly be draws where this card seems great.
You're talking about a command, by the way, right? Where you get a pick two.
No, because you're only going to get one of the modes.
Choosing one.
Oh, I see what you're saying. It is a charm. I get what you're saying.
Yeah,
it's a charm.
That's how I feel about it, too.
It's a charm, but, like, imagine the bad charms, because this is a bad charm.
And it's a sorcery.
Yeah, I'm not really into this one.
Yeah, it's best case scenario is gonna. The problem is it's not even as good. It's just worse than Servant of the Conduit, which when we're talking about like baselines for cards I'm excited about, it's pretty low.
All right, so what are you guys giving it?
Probably like a zero. I just don't see it with this card.
It's a charm where neither mode is good.
So you can give it a zero?
-3.
Yeah, all right. Walking Ballista is next. It's XX for a 0/0 artifact creature construct. When it enters the battlefield, put X-1/1 counters on it. You can pay 4 to put a 1/1 counter on Walking Ballista, and you can remove an X-1/1 1/1 counter from it to deal 1 damage to a creature or player. Isn't Triskelion like a card that like sees Legacy play in bad decks?
I think more Vintage play than Legacy play.
Oh, sure. Vintage is...
Yeah.
That's a good deck.
Yeah, and this is just better than Triskelion, right? Because if you cast it for 6, it's the exact same card? Yeah.
No, Triskelion is a 1/1.
Oh, sure.
What?
Triskelion is a natural 1/1, so it's a 4/4 for 6, basically.
I didn't know that.
So this card is... If we were doing this yesterday, I probably would have given this card pretty close to a 0, because I don't think it reads as that powerful of a card.
It's surprisingly reasonable, isn't it?
Yeah, it plays much better than it reads. If just, like, it sort of gums up the works against aggro decks, and if you ever get to, like, activate its ability,
it's really flexible.
It's more of a symptom of winning than, like, if you're, like, paying 4 mana to put counters on it. It's like more of a symptom of winning than a cause, but like it at least closes out the game.
Yeah, it ends the game, and it's not like it's like this card is fine on 2, and like
I thought about this card a lot today.
I don't know. I saw it, or I've played it a couple times in the last 2 days where its mode was, you know, half of a Chandra's Pyrohelix for a Toolcraft Exemplar, and right, that sounds like kind of medium or whatever, but feels pretty good when you're doing it. I think this card is
I think this could be a key card in the Tezzeret control deck.
It's just like really decent. And it kills what it like busts up the Saheeli thing. It kills 1/1s. If you ever, you know, have like 8 mana or whatever, this guy's actually pretty insane. Like if you top deck him on like turn 10, he's great, right?
Yeah, he's just finished the game. Casey, what would you give this card in his grade?
Probably a 2 or a 2.5. I think it's like pretty close to just an average card, and I think it reads like a bad card, so Michael? I'm sure it'll just get better.
That's about where I'm at, too.
I would give this card a 4.
I think a 4?
I think this is going to be a format staple.
Interesting.
I didn't think that before playing with the card. I kind of was with Casey. And then I was like, oh, this card is good. And then I thought about it more and more and more. And I was like, this card might be better than Hangar Backwalker.
Interesting. So I don't think that Hangar Backwalker was nearly as good as people thought it was, and I think this card's a little bit worse than that, and that's okay. Kind of what's where like I'm forming the basis of my opinion.
Sure.
We
have a 2.5 and a 2.5 and a 4. I think that like it's a wine. That's totally fine. I think that this card is going to end up being a annoyance in my life.
It's flexible. I mean, I think that's probably its biggest.
Yeah.
Its biggest sort of.
Yeah, I think I had it number 2 on my list. Yeah, I did.
Yeah, being able to like, the most high impact thing I've been able to do with it is flip an Avacyn, right? Usually by like killing a creature of my opponent's and then dying.
Yeah, but it's sweet. Like if
that's really powerful.
Cast an Avacyn on their end step and like untap and Walking Ballista for 3 or something, and you're able to like, you know,
ping down a planeswalker,
yeah, exactly.
And then flip
like,
your Avacyn and finish
so it
off. It
does
it's
the
like,
whole
ugh.
0 mana Avacyn thing, but it also does like a pretty good just threaten to flip Avacyn instant speed. They, like it, I don't know, it's pretty decent. Where like a Hangar Backwalker that's already in play can't flip an Avacyn that you draw, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, this one you can already have in play and flip an Avacyn. I don't know. It was surprisingly impressive to me because it looks crummy. It looks like it's just going to be so bad on rate that it's hard to
work. And it's so much less efficient than Hangerback Walker, right? Because Hangerback Walker like got itself big really quickly, and this doesn't really do that. You know, you don't like go from one to two
but
nearly
the ping
as easily.
Thing is but, like really good.
Yeah, exactly.
And if a game drags out, this is the card you want to top deck.
I think that I could also see this being like good in and against a deck that I expect to be really good.
So. Cryptic. But yeah, I mean, it's no surprise that you like this card a lot because it's pretty close to being a fireball.
I don't see myself playing this card much.
Skeptical.
I don't
see 5 minutes into the future or more than 5 minutes in the future.
Man, I don't think this card's close to like even nearly as good as a fireball. What are you talking about?
I mean, for two mana, it's literally a fireball.
Well, I think what's going to happen though, a lot of the time is like, so it's not that efficient on rate until you top deck it in a game where like you have like eight lands.
Oh my gosh.
And then it's going to feel great.
If I cast this with Panharmonicon, do I get double the counters?
I don't think so because it's not a trigger. If it were a trigger, it would just die immediately.
Oh, that's true. Okay.
Science.
Next up, science. Would it die? I don't know. Next up,
do you get double triggers for removing counters from it? I don't know what Panharmonicon actually says.
I think that's an activated ability.
No,
so it's not
whenever something comes into play.
Yeah. Also, like that's an activated ability, not a triggered ability. Next up, we have Dislab. This card comes in with 33 points. It's blue 1 for an instant counter target spell, activated ability, or triggered ability. And that's it. That's the card.
Mana abilities can't be triggered. You can't.
Targeted.
Yeah, sorry. Mana abilities can't be targeted.
Get that forest out of here, Casey.
Yeah. Tap my forest. Not today.
Fun fact, fetch lands are not mana abilities. Those are activated abilities.
It's true. Deathrite Shaman also. This not a mana ability.
If you're playing this in a form where your opponent is playing Deathrite Shaman, you're really struggling.
Cube is great, so.
I've been impressed with this. Like, weirdly impressed. I was like, oh, this will be like Cancel. It's way, 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 way better than Cancel.
It sort of reminds me of Dissolve, right? Which was basically Cancel, but somehow way better than Cancel.
Yeah.
Where, like, most of the time it was functionally an identical card, right?
Yeah. So, here's the thing about this card. I have countered a Liliana Ultimate. I've countered a Nahirim Ultimate. I've countered an Evolving Wilds Crack. Oh my gosh. This card is just like, you just makes your opponent have to think way, way, way more about the game. And I love that.
It's closer to Summary Dismissal than it reads.
That's how I felt. I was like, did I just get 3-mana Summary Dismissal in my deck?
And I mean, a lot of the time it is just Cancel, but like, you know.
Right. When your fail case is Cancel.
A slightly better Cancel is like a pretty good card. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like Cancel is horrible.
Right. Yeah. Cancel is just like pretty bad, and we're like constantly in the quest for like a slightly better Cancel, right? Like Scatter to the Wind or
but this
dissolve,
is a tricky one, right?
Dissipate
this
or whatever.
Is way better than Scatter
it's,
to the Wind.
It's a tricky one, right? There's like a lot of play to it and how you use it, and
yeah,
right. Obviously, I think that this card actually lost some stock with me with the banning of Emrakul, but not like a ton. It still is good against that type of effect.
It also gained some stock over its replacement, which is Void Shatter, too. So, because you can expect to play against less decks that really care about the graveyard, like, Void Shatter got less necessary. So, because of that, you can say that this got a little bit better again.
Sure. I mean, I think that it's probably going to be the Cancel that you play most of the time, because it's just a little bit better than the other ones, right?
So, you're going to give it, like, a 1.5?
No, because I think Cancel is probably a 2, so it's probably a 2.5.
So, okay. I don't think this card is great, but, I mean, I can't really see building a control deck without starting with 4 of these.
That's how I feel. Right? I think that it's just a 4 of. I'm going to give it a 3.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a... It's like, it's just better than your other 3-mana counter spells, and you're probably going to play 4
better
of those.
Better than your average Cancel!
right? It's just better than Void Shatter. It's better than
I agree.
Scatter the Winds. It's
all that being said, it's at the end of the I mean,
but it's still mostly it's canceled. A 3-mana cancel, right?
But also it's canceled counters on ultimates, which is like the greatest.
Right, so every once in a while you get this really great upside.
Right.
But 90%+ it's just counter targets, but which is fine. That's sort of what they're trying to do anyways, right? They're trying to I think this is a really it looks like it did exactly what they wanted it to.
I'm legitimately surprised at how high the next card got. Not that I don't think it's good. I do think it's good. I'm just like we're like getting close to the top 10, right? We're getting close to the top. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. This is coming in at number 8. We have Yeheni, Unyielding Partisan. This card is 2 and a black for a 2/2 with haste, legendary creature, Aetherborn Vampire. How can you be Aetherborn and a vampire? How do you live long on... Wait, aren't vampire undying?
Don't ask me flavor questions.
Hold on, this card is a strict flavor fail, right?
No, it's the story of this set. He's like the leader of the Aetherborn Revolt, and he found a way to like extend their lifespans by stealing energy or life or whatever.
This is a really good reason to not worry about the story.
Yeah, it's stupid, but just this card is sweet.
Don't think that hard about it.
I'm interested by this. I find this interesting. He's like, we die really quickly, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to live forever.
Yeah, and he's an undying partisan, which is just a great title.
Like, yeah, so what he does is he has haste. Whenever a creature an opponent controls dies, put a 1/1 counter on him. You're going to eat them because he's a vampire. Flavor win. Sacrifice another creature you control, and he gains indestructible until end of turn.
See, I was hoping this was just the busted version of Antuco Husk, and he got a counter when you sacrificed a creature you control.
That's actually what I thought this card did.
That's what I read this card was the first time, and I was like, I don't know what they're doing.
Like, man, this card is great.
Like, why does it... So, like, first of all, like, let's just talk... Let's say that it did that for a second, because I, like, actually need to get this off my chest. When I read this card, I was like, well, I don't play Frontier... But you don't ever need to play Antuco Husk again. Because this card, or cards that give Antuco Husk haste. This has it.
The whole haste thing is like something else
if it did that, right?
Should like rally, sack everything, kill you, like in the right now kind of way. Like,
in a right now. This guy's kind of weird, though. I have a hard time envisioning where I actually want this card.
So I had this card on my list. And we're going to do, I think that we'll do a podcast on this in the next like couple weeks on the theory of words, which is a magic theory that Casey and I came up with, where sometimes you have basically the theory is you would have enough words on a magic card to make it playable. Now, the caveat to that is they have to be words that have impact on the game, right?
That's like the laziest theory I've ever heard, but it's also great.
It's also how we knew to spec on Deathrite Shaman.
Yeah, so that's true. That's how we made money on Deathrite Shaman.
It just had too many words to suck.
I don't even know that I finished reading the card. I was like, I don't know what this does.
It has three abilities. This card costs one mana.
This card is a 1-mana, 72-word card in a 1/2 creature. I'm going to buy these. I like legitimately did not finish reading the card until after I think I owned 30 of them.
Well, it sounds like it's working out for you.
Yeah, I did.
I don't know that I would buy 30 of these, though.
I mean, it also doesn't have hybrid mana in the top right corner and like...
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of reasons this card's worse than Deathrite
Shaman.
If
this card cost
like,
1 for a 2/2 haste, I think I'd be into it.
Yeah, with like with two great abilities.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But anyway, what I'm saying is this card falls... This is why I put it on my list. It just falls into the theory of words. It has enough relevant text where like I didn't have to finish reading all of the relevant text to go, oh, yeah, this card's playable.
Maybe. I'm just not sure it's good enough on rate.
I've been trying to make like an Aristocrats deck work with this card as kind of the backbone, and it reads a lot more like the Abyss in that deck than it does Nantuco Husk, which is interesting.
The Abyss is a great card.
Yeah. It and like Key to the City, like just kill him. Obviously, if it did, you know, if it got counters when your creatures died, like this card would just be insane. But, you know, if your opponents are blocking it or you're playing, you know, Fatal Pushes or Bone Splinters or whatever, you know, gets your jollies, then this card could be pretty powerful. It's hard to evaluate because It's not, you're not, it's like playing it for recreation. This is like the backbone of your deck if it's in your deck, right?
So I like it. I do. I hadn't thought about playing it with Fatal Push and Vengeful Rebel. Seem kind of sweet with it. Like the like sacrifice a token, give my guy indestructible.
I can see this Clipperth right deck now.
I mean, I sacrificed a blister pod to this guy just yesterday.
Float a mana with my guy.
Did it make you feel
shameful? Hold on. I actually can see this sequence right now. Float all my mana. Sack. Kill your guy. Kill your other guy. Dag with this.
Is there a Westvale Abbey somewhere in there?
No, you don't need... I was talking about with your crypto. All right. What do you guys give this card at the grade?
I don't know. This one is so hard to evaluate that, like...
I'm going to give it a 2.5. I don't know. I think it's probably a combo rating.
Yeah, because it's probably like a 3, right? Because it's the backbone of your deck. If it's in your deck, it's the backbone of it. So
I'd go 1.5, because I think if this is in your deck, it's the backbone of your deck, and I don't think this card is good.
And your deck is bad?
Yeah. I think you've signed up for a life of misery. But maybe an undying life of misery, so, you know...
Good news, bad news?
Yeah.
Next up, we have Heart of Kieran. This card is 2 for a 4/4 flying vigilant creature.
That's really good.
Yeah,
it's powerful.
It's also an artifact vehicle. Legendary artifact vehicle, in fact. It has crew 3, and you may remove a loyalty counter rather than pay part of its crew cost. So you can, you know, just start removing counters from your planeswalkers to crew this along with your creatures. And overall, I think this card is a solid 3.
Yeah.
I don't actually have a lot to say about this card. I think it does exactly what it looks like it does. A lot of people are like trying to play this in kind of weird decks. I think the place that it just belongs is in actually a planeswalker creature deck. So, you know, decks with lots of creatures and planeswalkers, preferably things like Liliana and Nissa and Gideon, like stuff like that, where like you have a lot of loyalty to play around with, or if you have a planeswalker that gets like a lot of loyalty that could fit into that deck, things just things like that. That's kind of where I see this.
It's really good with cheap planeswalkers. Like if you curve this into a planeswalker, it becomes really difficult to actually kill your planeswalker, and it's really good at fighting your opponent's planeswalkers. Yeah, so like
one of the things about that is just, people like, if I just attack it with my guy, it's like the same thing. It's like, well, except that you lose your guy, whereas you would have gotten a free attack on the planeswalker had this not been in play. That's like the most common argument I see is like, well, if I attack it with my my 3 power guy and you have to take 3 loyalty off your planeswalker, I'm like, yeah, and then your 3 power guy just gets eaten.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think this card is like insanely oppressive, mainly because it's legendary.
Right.
So there's like an upper limit. You probably can definitely not play more than 3, and I think plenty of decks probably can't play more than 2.
Yeah.
It depends on like how long you want games to go and how much filtering you have, but... It's powerful. I mean, a 2-mana 4/4, like...
Yeah. It's played really powerfully for me so far. Being legendary, I think it's a card that is actually legendary for power level reasons, more so than flavor reasons, which is, like, a good sign. And...
That they tried this as a non-legendary card and were like, no.
And also, you know, the fact that both Chandra and Pia can crew it is, you know, a flavor win. So this card's really firing on all cylinders.
Okay. I would give this card, I think I'm going to give it a 2.5. I think that it's like a role player in some decks.
It's a really good role player, though. Like, this card is very good. You just, you're capped on how many you can play.
Right.
Yeah. It's...
You see you right there, too?
It's, yeah, the only downside is legendary. Otherwise, this card would just be great. So it's probably a 2.5 to a 3, somewhere in there.
It's great regardless.
Yeah. I mean, it would just be like, it would be borderline oppressive, right?
You just can't play 4. Yeah.
Next up, we have Aether Harvester. This card is 3 for a 3/5 vehicle. It has flying. When it enters the battlefield, you get 2 energy. You can pay an energy to give it lifelink, and you can crew it for 1. So this card also passed the theory of words, and also passed the theory of playing with it. What in the world?
Yep. I think that both of these cards, actually the ones we just read, make the banning of Smuggler's Copter look like really aggressive.
This card especially would have crapped all over Smuggler's Copter.
This card's so good.
Yeah, it's really powerful.
So it's a lot less aggressively slanted than Smuggler's Copter. Like, so I don't think every deck wants it in quite the same way. And like the lifelink is less relevant than the filtering in a lot of decks. But if you're like in the market for extending the game... This card is really good at, like...
How are you ever going to kill a 3-5? Like,
it doesn't really die that much in my experience. I have not had this card die hardly ever.
Also, the art on this looks like something coming out of the Power Rangers, which is pretty great.
I think this card is really, really good. It's...
And the Power Rangers, man.
I don't know that it's like, it's just not an oppressive card.
It's not. It's just good.
Yeah, but it's really good. It's like good on rate. It only crews. I feel like this card would be playable even if it crewed for two.
That's so every time somebody crews this with a smuggler's copter or
like a servo? A Thraben inspector?
Thank you. Thraben inspector in playtesting. I'm like,
why?
Why can it do that?
Yeah.
Why is this happening to me?
So annoying. I'm having
flashbacks.
Yeah, this card is really good at slowing the game down. Like, you're just not going to kill an opponent quickly when they have one of these in play.
I would give this card a 3. I think that it will be the best card in a lot of decks.
Yeah, I would probably even say 3.5. This card is single-handedly made a couple of decks feel playable.
Yeah, I want to try it in more styles of decks. I want to try it in some mid-rangier stuff. But, like, I could see this card working really well with, like, Glintsleeve Siphoner, for example.
Yeah, exactly. It just does a lot.
But the thing is, there's nowhere this card is like that bad. Are you playing creatures? Yes. Then this card is probably like a
man,
fine
choice. Man, do I have
choice.
A deal for you.
Right? But doesn't it feel like that? Yeah. Like, how bad is this card ever bad?
Yeah, I mean, basically, as long as you're playing, you know, as long as your creature curve doesn't start at Torrential Gearhulk, this card is pretty powerful.
Yeah. Next up, and it came in with 50 points, so like people really liked it. Next up, we have Shock coming with 55 points. The most points a Shock has ever gotten.
That just feels so wrong. I feel like all these other cards in this list are so much better than Shock.
Here's the thing about Shock. Is we missed you. That welcome back. You're like 1.5. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's like a 2. It's like a pretty base level red card.
It's like slightly below what you like want to be doing with your life. So 2 might be correct.
Like, you're going to play it, but you're not going to be enthusiastic about it.
And honestly, like, Shock is usually not good enough in, like, most mid-range decks. Typically, you would rather have something that deals more damage to creatures in those decks. So it's usually constricted to the sideboard of those decks. And then the aggressive decks. And then sideboard sometimes of control decks, depending on if they don't have better options.
This is kind of a funny one. Like, being in the same set as Fatal Push, I have a hard time seeing this really see that much play.
Yeah.
I'm
going to give this card a 2. I think that it's playable, and like, yeah, there's not a lot to talk about. It's 1 damage, deal 2 damage, target creature player.
So it's fine on rate.
I think this card could make Thermo Alchemist great again.
It's fine on rate.
Other than that,
I
don't
know. Oh, man, what are we doing with our playtesting?
It's just like a bad... It's a bad amount to get out of a card, you know? Like,
I mean, Shock has just been forever playable.
It's like
it's literally forever, seen play in every format it's ever been
forever
in.
Forever fringe playable, right? It's like the kind of card that you end up playing sometimes, but you're not like... This is not a card I'm ever happy to draw.
Yeah, but you don't like playing decks with Shock. So, like, obviously you wouldn't be happy. That doesn't mean that, like, the card isn't playable.
I'm not saying it's not playable. I'm just saying it's really underwhelming.
I mean...
Yeah, you like to play specifically decks that are good against aggro and, like, don't want Shock. Like, obviously, you wouldn't like this card.
I mostly just question in the Fatal Push set, what Shock is really going to end up getting to do.
It's probably going to see a lot of play in red, non-black decks, right?
That's where I would expect it.
No.
I don't think that. I think that it will see mostly play in aggressive decks. I think that it could...
Yeah, I think that this card could not target... creatures, and it would play almost the exact same way in almost every game that it would be cast in this format.
I like that.
Well, one thing it does do, though, if you think about it, though, now that Smuggler's Copter is gone, it does kill, for example, it kills Tireless Tracker before the like when the crew's been cracked, it kills stupid Thraben inspectors that are in your way, and like your which
Thalia
is like Thalia was the next one I was gonna say. Like, there's just so many things that, like, just have too toughness right now that having a card that can kill those creatures that are in your way in your aggro deck that in the matchups where you just don't freaking want a Fiery Impulse can just go to their dome so that it's not wasted.
Well, I know. So I guess this also kills Saheeli.
It does kill break up the combo, yeah.
Kind of nice. I guess what we're playing a few of them in the Mardu list we've been trying, and it's like
mostly medium in that deck.
It's a card you kind of get roped into playing, and then every time you draw it, you're like, oh man, what's happening to me?
Yeah, I feel like mistakes were made most of the time that I have Shock in my hand, but it's fine. I don't know. It does what it says it does.
Like, it's depressing to me that this came in at fifth. That's all I'm really saying.
I can understand that feeling. I can understand. I appreciate that sentiment. Next, we have Tezzeret the Schemer. This card comes in at fourth, and it comes in with 57 points, only two more than Shock.
that was
for your benefit, Michael.
Thanks.
I actually need to say this because I think I'll forget, but I gave Michael a lot of crap a couple podcasts ago about his love for Ornithopter purely as a joke. And then the first deck that I played against Michael for Pro Tour testing definitely had four Ornithopters in it.
Was it the deck I was playing or the deck you were playing?
The deck you were playing.
Oh, well, you can blame that on Matt.
Okay.
That was Matt's deck, not my deck.
All right, deal.
Thank you. I appreciate that, though.
It was just funny to me. I thought that in my head. You, like, cast an Ornithopter. Okay.
Just wanted to, you know, live up to the
Ornithopter
loving hype. Yep.
Yeah. Tezzeret the Schemer is 2, a blue, and a black for a creature. Oh, what happened to him? No, I'm just kidding. He's a planeswalker. His name is Tezzeret. He comes with 5 loyalty. He has a +1 to create a colorless artifact token named Ethereum Cell that taps to, and you can sacrifice it to add a mana of any color to your mana pool. You can also pay 2 loyalty from him, so -2, to target creature gets +X, -X, where X is the number of artifacts you control, and -7, you get an emblem at the beginning of your combat on your turn. Target artifact you control becomes a artifact creature with base power and toughness 5/5. So here's the theme of this card. I thought this card cost 5 for some reason, so I thought that it was like kind of mediocre. And then I was playing against Michael, and it cost 4, and it like basically changed my entire opinion of the card, because that's what happens when you reduce a card's cost by, you know.
Cards are generally a lot worse when they cost more mana than you thought they did, and generally a lot better when the opposite is true.
Yeah.
I know this card is, like, great, but it feels close sometimes. Some of the games I've played with it.
Yeah,
he does some powerful things.
I think this is a card that you'll build your deck around, because, like, how else could you play with this card? And I do think that there will be Tezzeret decks at SEGs, at FNMs. I think this is, like, a 3.5, and it will be a role player in the standard format that decks will be built around. Like, it just ticks all the boxes, right? It's a... I mean, the games that like blew my mind were the ones where you like make an artifact every turn, and then you're tapping them for mana, but you're not sacrificing them for mana, and it was so annoying. I was like, why?
Yeah, it's if you're using like the improvised cards,
yeah,
it's pretty sweet. I think this is the kind of card too that like it feels like it has a high ceiling when I play it, but it only has a high ceiling if the deck you build to put it in is good.
Right.
So
that's important.
It's the kind of card that's going to feel really bad mostly because you're going to try to build decks around it, and there are going to be decks that don't get there. And then someone eventually is going to figure out some good deck that happens to play this card. You're going to be like, oh man, this card is a lot better than I thought because finally some non-idiot, you know, built a good version of the crappy deck I was trying to play.
Yep.
Yeah, I just don't see it with this card. I want to. I very much want to see it, and I don't. I think this card is really bad.
Give it a grade.
1.5, maybe a 0. I think this card will, you'll see a lot of play at the beginning of the format, then people will realize that it doesn't do anything, and then it will never see play again.
All right. Michael?
It's so hard to say. It's just, I mean, like, you were talking about combo cards, and obviously this isn't, like, a literal combo card, but this is, like, an archetype-type card. If there's a deck that can use all this stuff really well, I think it's going to be really good. Because if you're routinely able to cast it on 4 and, like, kill a small creature with the minus or plus and, you know, like, open up a lot more mana next turn, that's really good. If you can't do that, then it's unplayable. There's not really any in-between. Right? I mean, I assume that's what Casey's saying, too, right? You fall more towards the, I think this is unplayable side of things, but it's either
good or
unplayable.
Even when you're doing it with this card, I think it's medium. I think if you're, like, firing on all cylinders, this card's probably a 2.5.
Sure. I mean, it's mostly just that the modes are so different, for better or worse. Like, mana generation and killing things are pretty separate, and he does an okay job of closing out the game.
All right, next we have Yhili's Expertise. This card is black, black, two for sorcery. It doesn't deal any damage. All creatures get -3/-3 until end of turn. You can cast a spell from your hand with converted mana cost 3 or less. Okay, so I think this card is good. I think that it is the first card that people talked about in the set, and the hype train got a rolling, and nobody really put a stop to the hype train. You know, if you listen to other podcasts with certain Hall of Famers, then they basically told you this card was vintage playable, and that's not true.
What?
I felt like it came, like, the hype mostly came back down to earth on this a little bit.
I hope so, because, like, all I've heard about this card is it's, like, it's broken and it will be banned, so this card is fine. Strong. It's just fine. It's gonna be... I think that it will be a 4-of to a 3-of in some deck. The thing is like, you have... So, how do I say this?
So, like, it's a little bit worse than Linguish, right? Because... For what you're trying to get out of it, the minus is just...
Yeah,
unless, or like getting the mana back out of it is just not as good as getting the extra point of minus one.
One of the things that was said on another podcast was like, you get... it's they just kept comparing it to Bloodbraid Elf, and that is just so not even close to what's happening here. So you don't get card advantage from casting this card or any of the other cards. You get a mana advantage. And that is a very dangerous and potentially broken thing.
Well, it's powerful, but this card all comes down to how good the first half of it is, right?
Yes.
If the Languish half is good, card
then
is
the
great.
Card is really good. And so that's what's really going to be really important here is where do X3s lie in the format of a deck where you can play this card and then put a Liliana into play or put a or use a Ruinous Path to kill their other guy. Like, it's just going to depend on what that looks like. And for me, this is just always going to be a role player in your deck, and I'm going to give it a 2. I think that there's 0% chance this sees play out of standard. I don't know why anyone's talking about this card in modern or...
Yeah. It's fine. So, like, I think anytime you're putting in specifically Liliana, it's really good. Or Nissa, or, like, anything... on that same power level where it's like, okay, the board is now stabilized and I'm going to play a threat that is going to take over the game. That's great. That's good, clean fun.
Yep.
If you're using it to, like, cast another removal spell, that's pretty good, but it's not like...
That's
yeah.
Exactly. And the thing is you're not you're not drawing a card when you do this. Yeah. You're casting a card from your hand.
See, so right. It accelerates you.
I'd go further and say that, like, if you're playing a Ruinous Path off this in addition... it's probably, like, not even that good.
Yeah, I mean, unless it's, like... So, like, if you can kill their 2-drop, their 3-drop, and then cast a Ruinous Path to kill their Gideon, like, you're really doing it, right?
Yeah, so, like, that's pretty specific sequence is really good. My issue is more that, like, you just... This one, more than literally all of the other ones combined, the back half of it just... isn't relevant. It's nice if it happens, but you're playing this for the front half, and Wraths are already generally so good tempo-wise that I don't think, like, you don't need to staple tempo onto Wrath of God. Like, they're already... That part already happened.
Right,
yeah. Like, you already got to, like, invalidate two of your opponent's turns for one of yours. Like, if you get to put in a Planeswalker, cool, but, like, a lot of the decks that play this kind of card, the less than fours in your hand are going to be, like, a Fatal Push... and a Metallic Rebuke, and you're going to be like, well, I killed all your creatures, so none of this is stuff that I'm interested in casting for free.
Yeah, that's what's weird about this card, is I think that it's probably not as good in control decks as you would think it would be for,
it
like,
feels,
a Wrath
yeah,
effect.
It's, like, better in, like, a mid-range, like, a big mid-range deck, right?
Yeah, exactly, and I just don't know,
like,
kind
the,
of
the
where...
old Languish Siege Rhino deck.
Right, where, like, exactly, you... if you could cast, you know, an Abzan Charm to draw cards or something like that, you know, off this, then it would be great. But I just don't know.
That sounds like a sideboard card out of, like, a black-based mid-range deck, not, like, a format staple, right?
Yeah, I don't know how to construct the best Yhini's Expertise deck.
This card just feels a lot closer to Radiant Flames than, like, most other things to me.
It's like Bloodbraid Elf?
Well, I mean, it's just nothing like Bloodbraid Elf, except that it costs 4.
Right.
and it, and you know,
hits something that cost, it makes something that costs three free.
But yeah, but I like you, I, in a control deck, you just don't even really have things you want to cast most of the time.
That's my thought. It's like you're just gonna be stuck with like a counterspell in your hand. So let's give it a grade. What do you think?
It's probably a 2.5. I think it'll be a fine sideboard card and like pretty, like really good in the matchups that it's good in.
I'm gonna give it a 2.5. I think that it will be main deckable, but just gonna be an average card.
I think it most, it's sort, it depends so much on like what the power and toughness of creatures getting played in this format is, but like it feels like a you know, Languish minus, so it's like a C plus kind of card.
Sure.
Right? I mean, I guess that puts you at about a 2.5 or a 3. It's all like right. Fine, but not, you can't build around this card is basically
the, right? The number two card.
Yeah.
Which, and the most annoying card I've played against so far, Metallic Rebuke. This card is 2 and a blue for an instant. It's improvised, and it's counter-target spell and lets them control place 3.
Yeah, so this card is way more mana leak than you want it to be. And sometimes it's, like, way better than that, right?
Yeah, this card feels like worth figuring out how to best play it, because this card is great. This card is like 3 mana for that effect is fine. It's mostly cancel.
Yeah, it's easier to cast cancel.
Right, but right. Sometimes it's a lot better than that. Sometimes it is a lot better than that. Yeah. If your deck,
sometimes it's like the broken version of Force Spike, right? Or like,
yeah,
mana, I mean, leak, or anywhere you're like.
Yeah, so the number of times where I've been like, I can't cast the spell in my hand because they have a mana up is like, yeah, like, highly irritating.
Right, you can't live your life that way.
We kept playing yesterday, right, where I would have like a Tireless Tracker and a couple of clues in play. And it's really weird to be like, well, those are kind of lands.
Yeah.
Like, it just feels...
Yeah.
It's a strange one.
I think this card is going to be a format staple. I think that the amount that it's mana leak makes just is enough that I... And, like, this is all some very good Magic players are talking about. Understandably, they love blue decks. I love blue decks. I think this card is a 4. I think it will define standard for some, at least part of its lifetime.
Yeah, I think that this will be a major player, and it could be so good that like it may make other, like may make disallow less good because you can only play so many counter spells.
Oh, I think this card is much, much, much better than disallow.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's just that there's a deck building cost, right?
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, you can only play so many counter spells in your deck most of the time in standard. So, and this will probably push a lot of them out because it's
right
more powerful.
It's kind of like Tezzeret, right? In the sense that, like, it's like Tezzeret if Tezzeret was just always good, but eventually you're going to play against it in some shell where it feels, like, borderline broken.
Sure.
Right? Like, it's like Tezzeret, and then we ratcheted it up.
Right? Yeah, exactly. To where,
like, it's just always... 3 mana for Mana Leak is, like, mostly fine.
Yeah,
and like, it's frequently 2.
And sometimes 1. And when it's 1, it's like, whatever. How could I ever win? Right?
The tempo that the card can give you occasionally... And the thing is, like, if you play the game in a certain way, I think you can make your opponent... It's an easy card to, like, intentionally telegraph when you don't have it, or to try to hide a little bit when you do.
Right.
And I think that, like, that part of it, you're going to get a lot of incidental value out of, like, having played one of these in game 1, and then it's game 3, and you have a couple of clues sitting up, and your opponent, like, has to respect Metallic Rebuke.
Yeah, that's, like, one of the most powerful parts of Mana Leak was, like, I can't just, like, jam.
But I also can't not cast spells.
Yeah, so...
I guess I'm just going to concede.
So it's gonna be interesting. I'm gonna give it a 4.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe even like, yeah, it's probably like almost the basement for this card, right?
Yeah, well, I don't know that this card is like multi-format all-star, but I think this card is like really solid. It's just good, right? It's not that bad if you're paying 3 for it every time.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, you know, fine.
It's not every set though that we do get a 5, and the next card is a 5.
Yeah, this card is great. This card will...
This card was number 1 on every submitted list.
Yeah, I think...
Was it number 1 in yours, too?
Yeah.
I mean, it's literally the only 5 in the set.
Yeah.
Well...
This card will probably like warp the best every format.
Card in the last, like, a lot of sets.
So the card is Fatal Push. It's a black. It's an instant. And it's destroy target creature with converted mana cost 2 or less. Like, What more could you want? Oh, wait. No. No, it's not. It also has Revolt. Destroy target creature with that has converted mana cost 4 or less instead if a permanent you control off the battlefield this turn.
So yeah, it went from like mini smother to super smother that cost half the mana.
My favorite thing was Paulo tweeting how good this card was. And then he like 5 minutes later tweets, wait a second. This card triggers off of fetch lands. This card is insane. And I was like, yeah. There was a really good...
when he thought it was bad, it was good.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is, like, it's just better than Disfigure, which already sees modern play and legacy play. Like...
Yeah.
I mean, comparing this to Disfigure is like comparing a Porsche to a Fiat.
Like, the card is just... the card baseline is already good. Like, it already kills Tarmogoyf and every aggro creature you could want in, like... It would already be a multi-format sideboard card if it did nothing else.
Substantially better than Path to Exile?
Oh, I think this card...
this card is better than Swords to Plowshares.
I said that. I said, I think this card is better than Swords to Plowshares. People are like, you're crazy. I'm like, no, I... Like, I... So you have Taster. You have...
That's it.
Grizzlebrand.
Okay. Which, if I had Pat... Like, I was never beating once it came into play.
Right. It doesn't matter what removal spell it is. It wasn't going to resolve. Right.
Well, I actually don't know what... So Tassiger was, like, it, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think Gurmag Angler is a little bit more popular than Tassiger in Legacy right now, but yeah.
So in Legacy, Modern would be Tassiger.
But in Modern, it is literally Tassiger that it doesn't kill.
Yeah, and I think that...
Are there any other creatures
cards
that this
people play?
Kill?
No. Not that I can think of.
Not good ones.
It's literally better than Swords to Plowshares.
Yeah, I think that, like, cards like Delve creatures will get more popular... Because of this card, right? Because it's like...
Oh, and because this card wants you to play a bunch of, like, fetch lands.
I cut Terminates for my Jund deck so fast when I saw this.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like, why even bother playing Jund, right? Isn't like it's the kind of thing that makes, like...
Because Lightning Bolt's really good.
Yeah, but it's just like...
But yeah, Bug became, like...
Became a real option, right? Or just green-black. So that, like, that opens you up to who knows what.
I think this card is, like, potentially great in Grixis Delver. Could make that. Yeah,
it's
a real
good
deck.
In decks that have black mana and fetch lands, right?
But especially when you're trying to get away with running like a really low land count, and you're playing Tassigers yourself, you're sort of double doing it.
Yeah, there's just
right. Like this card is like oppressive.
I don't have words.
Yeah,
They do a really good job of printing cards that, like, have modern playability outside of standard. They've gotten a lot better at it. And I really appreciate it when they do it. This card is standard playable, but it isn't like Doomblade, right? But in other formats, it's like, oh.
Super like, Doomblade?
Yeah, it's like way, way better
than
that.
One mana Doomblade with no restriction?
Yeah, the card is great. Like... And the funny thing is like, well, what do you do when, like, you don't have a fetch land? I'm like, you kill their Tarmogoyf? Like, what are you talking about?
That's the thing, right? Like, 95% of the time, non-revolt is good enough.
Right, and then, like, if they kill your creature, then you get to kill their bigger creature. Like, oh, this card is going to, like... Modern will never be the same because of the printing of this card. It's insane.
I think it's vintage playable. Like, I think the cards...
Yeah, like, if people played creatures, right? No, like, you'll definitely board this, like, against Mentor decks
right.
in vintage.
No, that was like one of my first thoughts.
One of the two or three best spot removal spells ever printed.
Yeah.
Yeah, this card is just something
There's, like,
else.
Basically no downsides.
Yeah, a lot of people are like,
And at the same time, they balanced it for standard, right? Swords to Plowshares would be terrible to play with in standard. This card is fine. Yeah. Like, the slower a format is, the less good this card is. And when you don't have fetch lands, like, it's not that easy to just, like, snap trigger revolt every time.
Yeah, it was actually funny. When they spoiled revolt, I was like, I wonder if we'll get fetch lands. just another 6 months of, or, you know, of like...
And then you saw this card and you said, oh, no, that's definitely not happening.
Yeah, that's... I was like, oh, like, we're gonna... Maybe in, like... The last set of the next block, we'll get fetch lands, and we'll get like 6 fun months of like a whole new standard, right? Because like the mana bases would change so much, and
this card
be
is
really
perfect
cool.
for a no fetch land standard, right?
Well, that's the thing. And then I saw this, and I was like, "Oh,
yeah, probably not.
Yeah, we're not.
That sounds
we
oppressive.
Are not getting fetch lands. And if we do, the format's just gonna be so weird.
Yeah, you're gonna be playing a lot of 5-cost creatures.
Yeah, like a lot, a lot.
All right, that is it for the set review. How do you guys feel about the set?
I like that most of the really good cards are interactive cards. Like, I think that that's a huge boon, because Standard has been sort of dripping off, like, tipping off on interactivity recently, so that's nice to see. And I think that the cards, there's a lot of interesting cards that, like, I felt like I really struggled to evaluate a lot of the cards in this set.
That's
where,
how
like,
I felt, too.
Like, Smuggler's Copter is, like, you know, pretty obvious. Heart of Kieran is pretty obvious. But, like, there's a lot of, like, I actually don't know how good Yhany is.
Or it, even the cards that you know are good, it's hard to tell how good they are. Stuff like Aether Sphere Harvester, right? You're like, well, yeah, I mean, obviously this card is good. But is it, like, oppressive good? Or is it just like, yeah, this card is good, good?
Sorry, my, I'm just, go ahead.
I don't know. I think a lot of stuff, there's cards that aren't even on this list that I'm really interested in, like Renegade Rallier and some other stuff like that. That,
yeah, I mean, and there's a creature that makes a monkey token in this set. We didn't even talk
a
about
a legendary monkey token.
Legendary monkey.
I honorary mean, number one.
What more could you want in the world? I think this set is sweet. Yeah. You know, we haven't done it in a while. Do you guys have any shoutouts this week?
No.
Michael, you have any shoutouts you want to give? I do. That's why I'm doing this.
Okay. Well, you should have let on your own shout out so Casey and I had some time to come up with a shout
out. I'll say my shout out. So I left my job today. It was my last day at a company that many fans know that I'm like pretty passionate about. I left a company called Thumbtack. And I don't think that the way I put it to my dad is this. It would be like leaving your church in a lot of ways. I am a different person today because of Thumbtack than I was 2 years ago. And it's all for the better. I have, other than the fact that like Casey has to hear me talk about Thumbtack a lot, like yeah. It's just mono upside.
I mean, yeah. I mean, like detached retinas do run in my family. And the fact that I have to roll my eyes so much at you raving about Thumbtack is like a real problem.
So a few things. One, it's literally the best thing that's happened to me outside of a, like the podcast, my wife, like my baby, like my puppy, like these guys. It's just been that amazing
so
in my
life.
So
it's like number 34 on your
No, list. It's like way better than like ever meeting Michael. And
if you had to give it a power ranking.
but the thing is like it's good for a lot of reasons. I'm taking a new job and a whole new career path, and like they're very supportive of that there, which isn't typical of companies. Like they're usually pretty mean to you when you decide you want to leave. And I just really appreciate them. I want to give Thumbtack a shout out. You can check them out at thumbtack.com. If you ever have anything you need done in the world, you know, if you need all the way from a lawyer to a plumber, go to thumbtack.com, put in a request, and we'll send up the five professionals your way. We can't say we anymore, though.
Can you get a podcast shout out from Spencer on Thumbtack? Is that a service you offer?
It is now.
I can probably, I mean, I could probably add that to Thumbtack before I leave.
I might sign up for some of those.
But no, it's just been an amazing ride, and I just want to give Thumbtack a shout out. They've just been amazing, and yeah, I love them a lot, and it's super bittersweet to like, I mean, when you like tell the person that's hiring you, like, listen, I won't leave this company for less than this much money. And they're like, okay, we'll give you that much money. It's like, well, okay. It's just interesting. So shout out to them. Super cool. And then shout out to the fans. So I keep refreshing my YouTube channel because like something weird is happening over just today. So this morning we had like 200 and like, I don't know, 30 something subscribers. And like, it was pretty hard to get to 100. And like, we've been getting a lot every, like we got 10 last week and like 10 the week before that. And then, so we got like, so like close to 30 so far today. And then like every about 10 minutes when I refresh the recent videos. So for example, the Aether Revolt standard testing video started at about 200 views today. And it's currently at 735. And then the deck tech started at like 80 views today. And it's at 315. So very interesting. And 20 likes also. I didn't notice that. So shout out to...
Yeah, but people. Two dislikes too. So your ratio is still worse than the Sneak and Show one.
Which is 3-0.
Which has 91 views.
Yeah,
it only had like 60 or whatever 2 hours ago when you
I put it on a loop on my phone. It had 85.
Sure, sure.
I put it on a loop on my phone.
Which was not true. It actually had 89 at the time, but it looked better when I said it had 85.
The old lying trick.
Yeah, and its average view time, for those wondering, for our 47-minute deck tech is 8 minutes and 15 seconds.
That's great. I actually really appreciate that.
And then people were like, oh my God, this is actually going to go on for half an hour more.
But to be fair, you guys did, somebody did tell you they listened to it on the way to the GP.
Yeah, the whole way there.
They probably crushed Casey because of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man. So shout out to everybody who's checking out the YouTube channel. With my new job, I'm going to try and post like a lot of YouTube content and like just make it a full-fledged YouTube channel. But yeah, shout out to everybody. Did you say you have a shout out? Michael?
No. Still don't have a shout out.
Okay, sounds good.
But I appreciate the opportunity. Yeah, shout out to Spencer for giving me the opportunity to give a shout out.
Oh, man. Thanks, man. Got a shout out on my own podcast. I feel so good. thank you, everybody, for listening. Don't forget to check out patreon.com/ccmtg. Oh, man. Do we have to do hashtag? Would that be good? I think we still do.
Oh, man. All right.
All right. Hashtag would that be good is our Twitter outreach program. You can tweet anything you would like with hashtag would that be good. And if it doesn't, you know, sell me Ray-Bans or have things that, you know, we're not going to talk about on the show, then we'll probably read it. Oh, you know what's great is I typed in hashtag would that good. And it comes up with a picture of you and Danny. That's great.
Well, you know, I'm not the smartest person, so sometimes I just forget words in my sentences.
All right. So we have... there are Ray-Bans.
Yeah.
The troll.
What's the date? It's the 16th?
Yeah.
So we start on the 9th?
Yeah.
Halving 15... No. We already read that one. We read that one. We already read that one. This one. We have... how was it not... Hashtag Michael Work Colossus. Hashtag Brother Michael. So first of all, if you play Metalwork Colossus at the Pro Tour and win the Pro Tour, your new nickname will be Michael Work Colossus.
Can I get an Oracle ruling on the card and change its name too?
I see no reason why not.
Okay, well, I might just play Metalwork.
To be fair, if you win the Pro Tour and you like say on camera, like this is now Michael Work Colossus, I'm sure people will just call it that.
I mean, I'd have
to. Or they'll just throw things at you for being so conceited.
Yeah, well, I'll actively boo you, but like,
but you'll still call it what I request you call it. So it's
yeah, it's courtesy.
You want a Pro Tour? We have an AMA Skype call for patrons of CCMTG at $10 per month or more before the Pro Tour. Hashtag would be good. So yeah, so what we're gonna do? If you are a patron of $10 or more a month, you will be invited onto a Skype call with Michael and Danny, who are going to the Pro Tour, and myself. We'll set up a day, sometime before the Pro Tour, and we'll record that Skype call, and then we'll post it on as the patron-only podcast for this month, so that everyone who is a patron can listen to it. But yeah, if you want to be a part of that call, you know, $10 or more per month, and you can listen to whatever terrible deck Danny picks for the Pro Tour. Yeah, I was going to
say, it might be good or it might just be me and Danny both making really bad life choices.
Yeah, so. Dodge buying the naming rights to the new Los Angeles football stadium that the Rams and Chargers will be sharing. Hashtag would that be good.
Boo. Boo. All right, what's next?
Is that all you're going to say to that? That's at Kiora's follower. That seems fine. I mean, I feel like the number of puns, like, that people are, like, given per day, like, without being booed is too many, so that was probably appropriate.
Well, my favorite stadium by far, there are two. The New Orleans Pelicans play in Smoothie King Stadium, or Smoothie King Arena.
Yeah, I believe Smoothie King Arena.
And which that's, is... I mean, great. Just, who doesn't want to play in Smoothie King Arena? But there is also, I believe that, the Louisville men's basketball team plays in the, Pizza Hut
Yum Arena or something like that.
Which is, I do know about this one.
Yeah, it's like the Yum Foods Pizza Hut Arena. Something great like that.
Yeah, we're like, it sounds like something where like some semi-pro like or like JUCO level college should, yeah.
That's great. Super I'm all in favor of really outrageous stadium names. Smoothie King Arena, though, I think is my favorite.
Yeah, because it's just like, Smoothie King doesn't sound like it would be a very big company, so the fact that they have the naming rights sounds impressive, right?
It's just great.
Every time I think of Smoothie King, I think of the literal song by Bowling for Soup, Smoothie King.
I'm not familiar with that one.
Yeah, well, that's what I think of. All right, next up we have at Spencer13H at The Rock. I you know, there are things that happen in the world that, you know, I'm just glad come back around. And me being tweeted out with famous people is like one of the ones that always brings a smile to my face. It was always T Swizzle for a while, which was pretty great. But, I enjoy, like, you know, like Casey with his cheese on his grilled cheese. I appreciate the...
I liked that grilled cheese video the other day, by the way. That was great.
So I watched it. I actually just saw it and just tagged him immediately without watching it. But
it was a really bizarre video. There was people just like eating a lot like of American cheese.
That seemed like so much work for a grilled cheese sandwich.
I didn't watch the video.
You should have. It was great.
It was like an inappropriate amount of work for what is literally a grilled cheese sandwich. Like nothing special about it. Other than the fact that it's large.
Yeah. I mean...
But it wasn't even, like, world record large, right? It was just, like, really big.
Yeah.
Just uncomfortably large.
And the worst part about it is at the end of the video, they put the grilled cheese sandwich in the microwave to finish melting the cheese. I was like, what did I just watch? Who found this appealing?
I did. They know their target audience. It's just not Casey or you. It's me.
All right. But yeah, gotta know hashtag would that be good. I don't know what gotta know hashtag would that be good would mean, Scotty. I'm really sorry.
He's gotta know. Would that be good? This Ray-Bans deal?
That would be a good deal.
That is a really good deal on Ray-Bans, Scotty.
I just...
Click it.
So how can like something that I love so much that happens in my life and something that I hate so much in my life come together?
I'm going to buy you knockoff Ray-Bans for your birthday. And then tweet at you about your gift.
All right, everybody. That will do it for this week's episode of Constructive Criticism. Don't forget to check out the Patreon panel at Patreon channel. The Patreon at patreon.com/ccmtg. Check out our sponsor at Oasis Games and go to the YouTube channel at youtube.com. Search Constructive Criticism and you'll find us. Thank you, everybody. And we'll see you guys all next week.